Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus at York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this August 26th edition of Vantage Point here on WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's the York College online radio station. Oh, yes, at this time of the year, as I said, I think last week or week before, I get withdrawal symptoms because classes are about to begin, but they'll begin at York College without me. But that's okay. I really enjoyed my tenure there and continue to enjoy my connections to that great campus. Well, today we have a special edition of Vantage Point that will deal with a very critical crisis. The focus for today's show is entitled The Water Crisis in Newark, Creating a Safe, Just, and Sustainable Community. We anticipate being joined very shortly by Roz J. Baraka, the mayor of the city of Newark, to talk to us about that crisis. Well, water crises are no stranger, really, to these United States of America. Perhaps the most notorious in recent years has been in Flint. And just reading something the other day, apparently they're still having difficulty with the water in Flint. And having worked with the Institute of the Black World 21st Century's Black Family Summit a couple of years ago, there was actually a convening of a strategic planning session at Howard University to look at the crises of water, including various kinds of contaminants, including lead, all across the country. What was discovered was that Flint was really literally the tip of the iceberg, that the contamination of water, particularly in urban inner city areas and marginalized communities where large numbers of black people live, was epidemic. It was seriously out of control. And much of that has to do with the neglect of infrastructure over the years, as well as disinvestment over the years. And so it is a major, major, major problem. And it is a problem which the mayor and administration and the citizens and residents of Newark are grappling with big time. And it's one that we really, really need to take seriously because these environmental questions are not just short-term impacts. Lead in the water has an impact on the intellectual capacity, potentially behavioral outcomes that are lasting and sometimes irreversible. So the citizens of Newark are understandably nervous. We have to always be aware of the families and the families, the issues that they're raising. They have a right to be concerned, and we want to be empathetic and sympathetic to that reality. And in addition to that, we also want to talk about the way in which the city is responding to the crisis. And I must say, citizens have a right, obviously, to respond. But we should also be aware that in a political climate, dare I say that there are often sharks in the water as well. And that's normal, frankly. That's the way the political process works. There are people who will take advantage of this circumstance because they have opposition to the current mayor. And in some ways, that's fair game. That's the way the political process operates. But what we want to do is separate out fact from fiction to get the background and to share ideas about how we can concretely deal with this crisis. And that's why I'm delighted that the Honorable Roz J. Baraka has been kind enough to take time out of an extraordinarily busy schedule to join us this afternoon. Mayor Baraka, welcome to Vantage Point.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, Mayor Baraka, I just want to start off by asking the question about this water crisis as relates to lead. And to ask you, is this a recent issue or is this something that's been lingering for some time in the city of Newark?
Well, Newark, like Newark is 350 years old. Like most major cities in America, we have lead service lines. We've had them since the 1800s. We've been using sodium silicate in the water for about, I would say, the late 50s, early 60s, sodium silicate in the water to coat the pipes, like most cities in America do, because we don't have any, nobody has done any real infrastructure fixes. So once the sodium silicate deteriorates or it became less useful in Newark, we had to find another chemical to coat the pipe, which is an orthophosphate, but it takes those chemicals like 6 to 8 months to optimize. So in the meantime, we used filters. So we've been using these filters in about 14,000, 15,000 homes that are affected by this. We've been using filters in those. We passed out 38,000 filters and put the new corrosion control in the water. And we began a lead service replacement line and service replacement line in May. Obviously, we tested a couple of the filters because we were trying to test the orthophosphate to see if it was actually getting into the pipes. Tested three homes. Two of the filters, while they reduced lead, didn't reduce it below the level that was required, and one of them did. And so out of an abundance of precaution, we decided to give out water until the EPA and the DEP and our guys do a larger test on these filters to see if they're in fact working. When we started that process and started giving out water, then we had a frenzy of folks because we were giving out water, start to question why we were giving out water, what's going on, so forth and so on. But we've been dealing with this problem now in Newark for some time. So that's where we are now, except this morning we just got a $120 million bond from the county that we worked out. That's going to allow us to replace the lead service lines in about 2 years. It would have took us 8 years. It's going to take us about 2 years now at no cost to the homeowner.
Right. Well, the reason why I wanted to start with that first question, Mayor Barack, is because, you know, and I understand that people have a right to be fearful. This is a lead poisoning is no joke. I mean, it's a serious thing. But then there are people who act as if, and I'm not saying this in a negative way, because when you have hysteria, people pile everything on the current administration. And then I just wanted to establish that this issue, and I already commented on it in my opening commentary, has been going on for a long time. It did not begin with your administration. It has been going on for decades and decades and decades. And you and your administration, you know, are responsible and accountable for what happens now, but you have inherited the situation that you're working on. So I just wanted to sort of get that out, that point out. And you've already anticipated my second question, and that is, what are the status of the current developments in terms of the city, county, and the federal contributions? What's going on at these different levels?
Well, the federal government has given, the only help the federal government given us is like the engineers and scientists have been helping us test filters and all these other kind of things, even the pipes. But we've gotten no monetary help from them. We've gotten no, not even water from the EPA. You know, the lead copper rule doesn't even require you to give out water. Doesn't even require you to give out filters. It just tells you have to tell people that it's lead in the water, which we've done. We've decided to do more than that. And, you know, we haven't gotten anything from them, which is why we had to come up with a creative way to get the money to solve the problem ourselves. And that was the county. And with the state's help, we can get this finished.
The other thing I wanted to ask you was about the breadth of this, because from what I understand, that you know, it's a certain targeted area, unfortunately, 18,000 or so, 14,000 homes that are affected, and unfortunately, again, the most marginalized communities in some ways. But this is not a citywide phenomenon; it's really confined. Is that correct to certain neighborhoods?
Yep. I mean, the research, the data from the EPA, DEP, CDM Smith, our private consultants are telling us that in a Pequannock area, our sodium silicate that was in the water is not working, that in other areas it is, in fact, functioning. So a lot of part of the city is serviced by the Pequannock area, you know, all of the West Ward, parts of the South, parts of the North. So it's a mixed kind of community, right? So it's, you know, you got some middle-class residents in Forest Hill and the Weak Lake section area. So, and then you have more lower-income residents that are affected too. So it's a kind of mix. of communities that are affected, which just is especially homes that are very, very old,
right?
Older homes that are affected by this, 1 to 4 family homes.
Right. Now, precautions, because, you know, the other thing that your administration has been doing, and as you said before, and it's important, you made an important point, and that is what the minimum requirements are is essentially to notify people, which I think should be more than that. But you have already affirmatively gone beyond that because you seek to, you know, to do things in a way that's sensitive to the concerns for people, which is, you know, a part of, you know, your administration, part of your legacy and part of your history in terms of the work that you do. So now in terms of what you want to share with the people who are listening, what kind of precautions should residents be taking while a solution to the overall crisis is devised?
Right. So they should first find out if they have a lead service line. You could go to NewarkLeadServiceLine.com, type in your address, and it'll tell you if you have a lead service line. If you know you have an old home and you type in it and it doesn't show up, then I would call the water department anyway at 973-733-6303 and get them to come out and test and see if you, in fact, have a copper or lead line. And they can do that. It'll take them about 4 or 5 minutes to tell you that. I would do that, and then if that is so, sign up for the lead replacement line so they can replace your service line. And then go to any of the rec centers and pick up bottled water that we're giving out. We're giving out 4 cases of water to families every 2 weeks. If you are elderly or shut in or you can't, you know, come out of the home, you could call the water department, 973-733-6303 again, and we'll deliver it to you. But, you know, tomorrow at 6 p.m. at City Hall, we're having a volunteer meeting. We're getting a bunch of volunteers together because we're getting ready to go door-to-door at all 18,000 homes. Great. To get them to sign up for the lead replacement line. And we're going to drop off some water while we're at it. But we want to get you to sign up for lead replacement. Since we got the money now, we want to be able to expedite the process.
Now, Mayor, you like me, I talk fast sometimes. So would you please repeat that phone number again? Is it 973-733-6303?
Absolutely. That's it. 973-733-6303.
Okay.
That is
all right.
The number. Yeah.
And now you're also moving into the next question I wanted to address, because I know there are people who want to do things both locally and nationally. I'm reminded of someone who's probably a friend of yours, Kevin Powell, when the Katrina catastrophe struck, the hurricane. He organized from his networks across the country literally hundreds of people to go and do repair work and to take supplies and things of that nature. So is there a role for non-governmental organizations or individuals to play? And if so, tell us what they should do and how they should do it.
So one, in a very fundamental way, you could always give water if that's what you want to do to the Community Food Bank of New Jersey. And they are our storage place for water. You could go to also United Way of Essex West Hudson website, and you could donate money. But more importantly, if you feel like coming to the city of Newark, you could come in. We're having our first meeting tomorrow. We're going to have many meetings after that to help us go door-to-door to 18,000 homes to get them to sign up to get their lead service lines replaced. That's what we need immediately. To get these lead service lines replaced. We're trying to finish this massive public works project in about 2 years.
Okay, so again, the Essex County Community Food Bank, is that right? That's the designated?
Community Food Bank of New Jersey is the designated drop-off spot for water.
Drop-off spot, okay.
Yep, and if you want to donate money, you could go to United Way of Essex West Hudson and donate there online, and that money is designated for water.
And again, so people who want to come to the meeting tomorrow night, you're having a major meeting tomorrow night. Repeat that again, the time and place for the meeting for volunteers.
Tomorrow, 6 p.m. at Newark City Hall in a rotunda on the first floor.
So, Mayor, now I wanted to spend a minute or two because, you know, one of the things that we have been talking about, Institute of the Black World 21st Century, and is this bigger picture that you talked about as well. And I just want to ask again, to what degree is this crisis a function of eroding infrastructure and decades of disinvestment and neglect of cities like Newark by the federal government?
Repeat that again.
No, I'm just saying, to what degree is this crisis that this is that's now you're dealing with is reached an epic. I mean, it's really reached a serious crisis. But to what degree is this?
You
touched on it. I just want to reemphasize the whole question of eroding infrastructure, decades of disinvestment and neglect of cities like Newark by the federal government.
Well, in the state of New Jersey, there are 300,000 lead service lines across the state. So people are talking about Newark. Tomorrow you'll be talking about Trenton, Camden, all these places who are all getting exceedances. Across the country, there are millions of lead service lines. I mean, though lead was banned, in the 80s, there are a lot of homes that still were built with lead, and most of those homes are in these cities and in rural communities as well, are in these cities where we are in the preponderance. So it is... We are disproportionately affected by it, but it goes across like lines. You have some rural communities that are using wells that have lead and all kinds of other things that we just figured out. But this because there's a failure to invest in the infrastructure, we're still dealing with this problem 6-7 decades later, which is incredible because it costs money. I mean, a lead service line costs you anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 to replace. If the state has to replace 300,000 of them, that's a lot of money in its present sense. And across the country, you're talking millions, the infrastructure that has to be repaired to do that, particularly in these communities. Well, I don't think there's a lot of excitement to put that kind of money in these neighborhoods.
Right, right. And I guess as I come to near the conclusion, because many of us have looked to Newark and are focusing on Newark because you have a vision. This is not you're systematically talking about ways to address all of these questions, frankly, with relatively limited resources. So I guess, again, how does resolving the water crisis relate to your overall goal of creating a safe, just, and sustainable community? Because you certainly have laid out a number of plans. And I just want to make our audience aware of that and to remind even some of the citizens and residents of even Newark that your administration is pushing forward with a number of initiatives and solving this crisis as a part of the broader issues that you're working on.
Sure. I mean, we are trying to push the city forward, obviously, in a more equitable fashion, but it takes a lot of work to do that. You're dealing with old problems, decades-long, intractable issues. I mean, it's like you got a beehive on a porch that you don't walk past for 30 years, but it's just growing, and you know you have to remove it, and then I come and try to remove the beehive, and bees start coming out and sting a few people. And so now people are upset that they're getting stung, and that becomes the issue as opposed to us moving this beehive that needed to be moved for 20 years. So that's what's happening. The transformation is always painful. These things that we have to go through are always ugly. I mean, we need to change the lead service lines. We should have did it 50, 60 years ago. We're doing it now. The issues are upon us. We're going to have to get through them. But when we finish, we'll be better off than when we started.
And I guess I wanted to ask that question because, as I've said, and you've heard me say this, and I've said to many people both in your presence around the country, is I was terribly impressed with your campaign. It's not even fair to say a slogan. It's almost like a mantra, a way of doing things. You said, when I become mayor, we become mayors. And so I'm interested in your plans within that context of why it's important for people to participate, to become engaged, because, you know, many, many, many of us who do this social activism work all the time, we know that it's a hard task to do these things, you know, maybe people tend to come out when it affects them, but when it doesn't affect them, you don't hear anything. But you were trying to create a different kind of culture where the process of restoration is not just a singular act of a person, but it's a collective enterprise. Would you comment on that?
Yes. So that's the whole, I become mayor, we become mayor thing is all designed to get people engaged in developing and transforming a city and not counting on one or two people to do that. I mean, the problems we have are so intractable and have been there for so long, we wait for one person to get it done. And when they can't get it done, we get upset and work to replace that person. But the person, he can't or she can't get none of the, any of these problems solved without the involvement of the community. And so we need the community. We need real collective work and responsibility. We need folks to get involved. We need their brain power. We need their physical power, their resources, to think about how to transform our city as a collective body and not as just a individual folks that are part of a political structure.
Right. And by the way, this is, again, why Institute of the Black World 21st Century, you know, has been focusing on Newark and is trying to find ways to assist. And, yep. I would suggest what you just talked about, the town hall, I mean, the meeting tomorrow, urging volunteers to come forward to go door to door, 18,000 doors. I mean, you don't see that kind of effort in many cities. And so the onus really is on people to do that, to come out, to volunteer, to get engaged, to become a part of the solution. And that does not mean that they won't have discussions with you. They may have criticisms, but that's a part of the process as well. But it's the main onus is, as long as it's going in the correct direction, if you see people trying to do, then it's important to do, as you said before, Ujima, collective work and responsibility. Well, Mayor, any final word to the citizens of Newark and friends who are willing to help? Any final words that you'd like to share?
You said it. I think we need as many people engaged in this as possible, and with our collective work, we'll get through it. I mean, it's a challenge for all of us. It's not the first issue, and it won't be the last one, given the age of our city, the inequity that exists here and in this country. There's a lot more work to be done, and we need a lot more people involved. So we invite you to participate in helping us get through this current challenge that we're in.
Right. Well, Mayor Baraka, we really appreciate you taking time out of an incredibly busy schedule to come and speak with us and to speak with our listening audience here on WBAI. And as you well know, we're working with you and trying to mount an urban Marshall Plan. That's one of the things that we need, and many other things at the federal level and at whatever level we can in order to support, you know, the kind of progressive policies that you're you're advancing, even in the face of difficulties and tough winds. Yeah. But, you know, Newark, in our judgment, is, for all of its difficulties, is a model of how people are to engage. So thank you so much for spending time with our WBA.
Thank you, brother. All right, man. Take care.
All right. Baraka joining us to talk about various things. It's hard for me to pick up all of those numbers, but there were a number of things that he talked about that are very significant. We're going to have Larry Hamm join us, too, in about 10 minutes or less to also sort of reinforce some of the points that were made. But I think the point I'd like to leave, and it's in disclosure, people are aware that the Institute of the Black World 21st Century is supportive of what's happening in Newark. That doesn't mean that we're uncritical, but we're supportive. And we're supportive because there's a legacy of a family, the Baraka family, and the current mayor, not simply to have inherited some mantle from his legendary and incredibly powerful father in terms of his contribution to the liberation of black people and humanity, not just because of that, but because of the policies that we see being articulated in terms of efforts to combat gentrification, which is a monster, and it's difficult, and it's not easy to overcome these challenges. But economic programs that are being advanced, educational programs, you know, people's assemblies, there are program after program after program that essentially are saying to people that it's we. It's not me, myself, and I. It's we. And I stress that because I profoundly believe in this work, right? I mean, this is what we all experience. Those of us who are progressive activists, you know, we're constantly trying to overcome the apathy and the trauma. And by the way, I understand the apathy and the trauma. We have been traumatized, particularly black people, time and time again, traumatized by displacement, traumatized, you know, by police brutality and all kinds of disinvestment and so forth. But on the other hand, we have got to also seize control of our own destiny. And it's not this is not a spectator proposition. We've also been kind of conditioned to just elect somebody and let them do it. And when they don't do it or it doesn't happen all right, then we're upset about it. And we can't do that either. And I'm not saying any of this in a mean-spirited way. I'm having a frank discussion about what I see as the condition of our people, not only in Newark, but around the country. But we have an opportunity here, it seems to me, given the kinds of spaces that are being opened up, you know, for people to engage. So, again, tomorrow, you know, go to City Hall. You know, if you're listening, and even from your neighborhood, you may even be affected, but go to City Hall, you know, because it's about your neighbors, too. We have to recreate community. And so I'm affected, and I should not just react when I'm affected. I should react even if I'm not affected. So if I decide to come over tomorrow and volunteer, then I'm not coming because my water is, I'm coming because I love my brothers and sisters. You know, and that extends at some level even beyond race and ethnicity and so forth and so on. We should be concerned about each other, and we should therefore be mobilized and organized to be engaged. So again, the issue is the lead pipe replacement. If you have a lead service line, there's some 18,000 homes at least that are in that category. The major effort and a major announcement today. That with the multi-million dollar grant from the county, that which would have taken 8 years will now take 2 years. But in the interim, there's a major effort to make sure that the filters work. And in the interim, therefore, also water. So there are places that you can go to get water. And there are people who want to donate water. They can also do that. You know, from New York City, from anywhere in our, the listening people can help bring in water to help the residents. Because water, if you have to buy it, is expensive. And a couple of cases may not last you as long as you need for all the different purposes. And people are necessarily frightened, scared to drink the water because the filters were supposed to work, but they didn't work. I mean, that's like serious. I mean, people get very concerned about that. So we want people to engage. And so in order to, if you have the one number I did get clearly is 973-733-6303, 973-733-6303 to report if you have a lead service line or if you have an older home and you suspect that there's an issue, get registered so you can get in line in order to have your lead, these lines replaced. That's the ultimate solution. Is to get it replaced. In the interim is the filters. In the interim is getting the water. But drink the bottled water if you have any concern, and there are places that you can go to get that. And I think it's the Community Food Bank of Essex and New Jersey. I probably messed that up. I didn't get that correct. But when Larry Hand comes on, he may also be able to help me to identify the place that people can go to, in fact, get water. And I would strongly encourage people throughout the area to get involved. Newark is our community. When one of us, none of us are free until all of us are free. I mean, if it's a water crisis in Newark, it's a water crisis where I'm at here. And so we all have to find our way to help and assist with this process in a very strong way. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Larry Hamm, who is the chairman of the People's Organization for Progress in Newark, longtime friend and one of the clearest leaders I know in terms of analysis of these kinds of issues. We'll be joined by Larry Hamm after we take this brief break.
On Tuesday, August 27th at 10 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl will present Tony and Grammy Award winner Dee Dee Bridgewater. Tune in to hear more about this extraordinary song stylist, actress, and entertainer. That's Tuesday, August 27th at 10 p.m. right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
August 26th will mark the 99th anniversary of women finally winning the right to vote after a struggle of 72 years. On Monday, August 26th, from 8 to 10 p.m., join the Joy of Resistance for a special on this rich history. We will speak with Sally Roche Wagner on her acclaimed new book, The Woman's Suffrage Movement. We'll present a play with period music where you'll hear the actual words of Frederick Douglass, Sojourner Truth, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and others, as after the Civil War they debated whether to push for black men or white women getting the vote, or to hold out for everyone getting it. So tune in on Monday, August 26th, 8 to 10 p.m., for a new look at the fight for women's suffrage and what we can learn from it today.
We're back, and again, we were really delighted that the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, whom I consider to be among the most progressive mayors in the country, I would count Chokwe Antar Lumumba of Jackson, Mississippi, as being in that number. Michael Tubbs from Stockton, California. There are a couple of women mayors, Gary, Indiana. I'm forgetting the first name now, Karen. It'll come to me in a moment, who are among those mix. But there are mayors across this country who, in the face of tremendous neglect and disinvestment for decades, who are really, really, really trying to figure out how to turn their communities around. And my point is that, to some degree, people are apathetic because of the neglect for all these years. And let me also say, because in many instances, I have to say this, even when black people got elected, they were not necessarily that interested in getting more black people even involved. It's much easier to get reelected if there's a small group of people who always vote, and then you can just keep getting that group involved. And so one of the contradictions that we face, those of us who are social and political activists, is that power can seize nothing without a struggle. And that includes sometimes black elected officials who argue they, and not that they don't do good, but they want to be the ones doing the good. And so therefore, they're not necessarily interested in enlarging the electoral pool. But you find this a new group of mayors across the country who are taking a different attitude. They want to get people involved. In fact, those of us who came out of the era of black power and black nationalism, you know, that was one of the things that we talked about in terms of electoral power, was to engage people and to create political structures like people's assemblies and other kinds of formations in order to get people engaged. Because quite frankly, elections do not equal democracy, in my humble opinion. Participation is democracy. That is what we need, people to become engaged in determining their own future. And in so doing, it doesn't mean that you're always going to agree with the mayor or anyone else. You have an obligation, frankly, to exchange ideas, to put your ideas on the table, to have principled and constructive, and I underline constructive, debate with whomever. But that's a part of the process of moving along. And it's not personal, really. And at the end of the day, you know, changes come about because of that. We're now joined by Larry Hamm, chairman of the People's Organization for Progress and a longtime friend. Larry Hamm, thanks for taking time to be with us this afternoon on Vantage Point. Of course, you're no stranger to WBAI, and we appreciate so much your leadership, your analysis, and your dedication for so many years. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you for having me.
Well, I just wanted to we had the mayor on earlier, and he was very forthright on a number of issues. I wanted to, because you and I have talked, and I know that the People's Organization for Progress is very concerned about this issue and is very concerned that people be aware that there is a real problem and that people are nervous and scared and fearful, as they should be, and that they have a right also to express their opinion and to protest and things of that nature. And I know that you supported those overall concepts, but we also want to, you know, sort of separate fact from fiction and those kind of things. And I thought the mayor really tried to lay out clearly what the direction was in terms of what's happening. So I wanted to, first of all, just take a step back and just let you give your assessment and your take, sort of synopsis of what's happening with this crisis. The mayor talked about it, and I asked about it. Was this a new thing? And certainly I've talked to you, and you've been saying, well, this didn't just pop up.
No, it is a ongoing problem. Going back as far perhaps as 1997, when the lead issue was being looked at. First of all, lead in the city of Newark has been a historical issue in Newark and in black communities and urban communities throughout the country. You know that, Ron, from your experience as an activist. Most people are familiar with the lead issue from lead paint and how toxic that was and how it, in fact, impacted on children in urban areas that came in contact and ingested that lead-based paint. But for many cities that were built, let's say cities that are older than 100 years old, and the city of Newark is 350 years old, in constructing its water systems, many times lead pipes were used. And that's the situation in Newark. Now, I didn't get to hear the interview with the mayor. I'm sure he went into this in detail, but Newark has two water sources, Pequannock and Monacae, and it's the Pequannock water system that serves roughly two-thirds of the city, and the Monacae system serves another third of the city. And unlike Flint, in Flint, the water source was polluted. That is, the governor and the financial manager that was put in charge of Flint's finances made a decision. That is, the governor of Michigan made a decision to switch Flint's water source from a reservoir that had clean water to, in fact, the Flint River, which had been historically polluted by industries in Michigan. That's not the case here. The source of the pollution here in Newark are the age-old infrastructure, particularly the lead pipes that bring the water into people's homes. Now, at one point some decades ago, the city of Newark started treating the water with an agent that would help seal the lead and keep it from flaking and getting into the water and polluting the water. And for years, that worked. And then around, perhaps 2009, 2010, there were problems not only with the corrosive formula, but there were problems with the water shed management system itself. And to make a long story short, the anti-corrosive formula began to lose its potency, and in time, the lead began to pollute the water. Now, through testing, the city was alerted by this, and initially the city's response was to use federally certified water filters, the pure water filters, and about 38,000 to 40,000 of those were distributed. And also the city moved to correct the water treatment formula, and they did that, but that will take probably 6 to 8 months to be effective. And, of course, you know, I'm sure the mayor talked about the need now to distribute bottled water. And people who are listening to this show, if they can, if they are able to donate water to Newark, please do so, because we're not really sure just how long there will be a reliance on the bottled water. Right. But in the meantime,
but Larry, can I just interject just one point as you're on the this outstanding narrative that you're laying out, and you're laying out some points really that the mayor may not have had time to lay out in terms of the different sources. But the one point that I really want to stress that you talked about, and that is, I opened up there talking about Flint, because Flint is sort of the poster city for what happened recently. But there's a major distinction between what happened in Flint and what happened, what is happening, and what has transpired in Newark. And that is, in Flint, you had the governor and others who were intentionally providing misinformation and or not doing what they were supposed to do. This was intentional. This was not accident, or you tried something, it didn't work. And so I want to make that point, because nothing that I have seen or heard in terms of what this administration is doing, that's not to say that there haven't been some glitches. There have been some glitches that are scary. If the water doesn't work, and all of a sudden, or if the, the certified things aren't there. But that's not because they were trying to hide the information or trying to deceive. And so I just wanted to lay that point out.
Right. And I'm glad you underscored that. I think I did mention that in the course of my soliloquy.
No, you mentioned it, but I just wanted to emphasize that.
I'm glad you emphasized that, because that is how the issue is being framed across the country. In fact, the headlines literally say, "Is Newark the next Flint?" I've actually seen that headline. And that fundamental difference cannot be overstated, because, as you said, there's the issue of intentionality. In Flint, in order to save money, because the town of Flint was actually paying for the use of that clean water in the reservoir, they wanted the town to stop paying that money and use another water source for free, and that free water source was the Flint River. In Newark, no decision was made to switch the water source. The water is, in fact, being polluted by pipes that were installed when these nearly 100-year-old houses were being built in Newark during the last century, during the 20th century. But at the same time, I don't want to say that this is any less of a crisis.
That's
the water
has
lead in it.
That's bad.
The water has lead in it when it comes out of people's homes. And lead-tainted water can have an adverse effect on human beings. And human beings have a right to clean, unpolluted water. That is a human right, and the people of Newark must have clean and unpolluted water. I believe, now this is my personal opinion, and I want to say this and preface it by saying I respect people's right to be outraged. I respect people's right to protest. I respect people's right to criticize and hold their elected officials accountable. I, however, do not believe that Mayor Baraka is personally responsible for this problem. I believe that he inherited the conditions that led to this problem. And I believe that he and the governor are making a good faith effort to straighten this situation out as quickly as possible. It's in no one's interest to have polluted water in Newark. The mayor lives in Newark. The mayor lives in the part of Newark that gets its water from the effective water source, the Pequannock water source. He lives there. His wife lives there. His mother lives in another location, in that same location. So he had no interest in bringing about a situation that would lead to the pollution, to the lead tainting of the water. I believe they are making good faith effort to straighten out. And today, a press conference was held where the county executive, did you see the press conference?
Yeah, but no, the mayor referenced it. He talked about that. He talked about what that meant in terms of shortening the time from 8 years to 2 years.
Right.
And there are a couple of other points, Larry, I'd like to also have you emphasize.
Okay.
He also mentioned a meeting tomorrow at City Hall in the Rotunda, where they're asking volunteers to come forward because they want to go. He gave the number, I'll repeat it again, that the people can call if they think they have lead service lines or if they know they have lead service lines, so they can. But he is prepared to launch an effort to go door to door at every one of those doors to get personal sign off and to get people registered and so forth. And so, and the reason I mention that is because of this whole notion of when I become mayor, we become mayor, and
right.
Your assessment of the degree to which really the engagement of the people in the process is incredibly important.
Right, right. It's absolutely important. First of all, and I'm sure the mayor mentioned this, that 70% of the people that live in Newark are renters, are tenants. So going door to door is necessary because you want to identify who the landlords are, you know, and who the people are that are being affected. And I think the mayor is making a good faith effort, you know, to straighten this out. And I hope everything is done, everything humanly possible is done to get this straightened out as quickly as possible. They are doing another test. Now, this latest crisis, when I say latest, I'm talking about in the last week, or last couple of weeks, was triggered by a sample that they did that only had 3 homes in it. There are 18,000 homes affected by this. So now I understand that the state, together with the city and the federal government, are going to test 225 homes to try and determine if the filters are in fact doing their job. Even in the three house sample that they did, all the filters had an impact. That is, they all lowered the lead level, but only one of them lowered it to 15 parts per billion, which is the federal limit, the federal standard. So they're going to see, you know, 3 is quite small a sample when considering 18,000 on the number of people affected. So now they're going to do a test on 225 homes. I know all of this sounds really technical to a lot of people. The bottom line is there's a problem. There's a crisis. And the crisis has to be straightened out. And people are moving. See, the part that upsets me is when people give the impression that nothing is being done. There's plenty that's being done about this. And it has been done over time going all the way back to changing the anti-corrosive treatment for the water, the filters, and now the long the distribution of water, and now the changing. Do you know what a big job that's going to be to actually dig up the lead pipes and change those in 18,000 homes? That is a very significant job that has to be done. And when we think about Flint, it took the people in Flint almost 5 years to get the state government to commit to changing the water system in Flint. So I think we've seen a lot quicker response here in Newark than we did in Flint, Michigan. But again, I just want to say
it's serious.
It does not take away from the seriousness of the problem.
Right. I got a couple more minutes, and I need a couple of informational things if you could help me with it, because you mentioned water and that people can bring water, and the mayor gave the place to take the water, but I didn't quite get it. It's the Community Food Bank of Essex County in New Jersey. Are you familiar with the site?
Vaguely.
Okay, yeah, it's the Community Food Bank. Yeah, so I'll have to I didn't quite get that. I was trying to write as I was getting, because we want people to get the water, but we want them to, people who are getting it, to go to the right place when
right.
Do
you have the number that he gave out?
Well, he gave the number for people who are trying to deal with you know, identifying that they have lead service lines and so forth. I guess people can also call that same number.
Right.
And there may be a general number that people can call. But anyway, we'll figure that out. But I did want to.
And for those Newark residents who are listening, if all else fails, call your local councilman at City Hall. I'm sure the city council people are prepared to give the correct information. Just get the general number for City Hall, ask for the City Council office, and if you call there, I'm sure your council person will know where you can take the water and what you can do to sign up to be a volunteer to help.
Right. Well, Larry Hamm, always great to have you on. It was great to have the mayor on.
Just one more quick thing,
yeah, quickly.
Ron.
Yes.
This is going to be a big problem, not just for Newark, but throughout the state of New Jersey. There are more than 100 communities in the state that have elevated lead levels in their water. So Newark is just going to be the beginning. And I dare say that this is going to be a nationwide problem.
Oh, no question.
And it's a problem that all of us are going to have to grapple with at one level or another. So, you know, people should be prepared for that. And there's a lot more to be said, but I'm sure we can do it in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, the mayor did talk about the fact that, you know, all across the state, he did mention that. And he even mentioned there are rural communities that have this issue as well. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, he did talk about that. Okay, thanks, Larry. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ron.
All right, that's Chairman Larry Hamm. Larry Hamm, Chairman of the People's Organization for Progress, an organization that I have profound respect for. I mean, they have been doing this work for decades, and that's not an easy thing to do. And it's because, really, of the selfless, visionary, dedicated leadership of Larry and the people who are around him that have maintained this organization and this in-motion, doing serious work repeatedly. Well, as I conclude, again, the one number I do want to continue to give out, and I apologize for not having been able to get that food bank down where the water is to go. But if you, again, actually just Google and call and Google and get the number for City Hall, I'm sure there's information you can get. Or if you're in Newark, your city council person, as Larry Hamm has suggested, could give you that information because they do need water. And it would be great if people, and I referenced the work that Kevin Powell did around New Orleans after Katrina, and you know he just, and there were a number of people who did that kind of work. So let's just pitch in and take as much water as we possibly can, so that people can have an abundance of water that they know is absolutely safe. Again, just want to conclude by saying that it's so important that people get involved. We in the Institute of the Black World 21st Century are focusing on Newark. The listening audience is aware of that. We had the State of the Black World Conference in Newark in 2016, hosted by the Honorable Roz J. Baraka. The town hall meeting was carried live by WBAI. And at that State of the Black World Conference, Mayor Baraka called for an urban Marshall Plan, which we in the Institute of the Black World 21st Century have supported. And we're still on that quest. In fact, I sent some information to Mark Morial, president of the Urban League, just in the last 24 hours. Saying, look, we need to get back on this, stay on this, while the Democrats are in charge of the House, pushing towards control of the presidency and the Senate. We need to move an urban Marshall Plan to combat and deal with many of these issues of infrastructure, but much more than that. The disinvestment has been disastrous to Black and marginalized communities across this country, and the mayor is very much a part of that effort and believes in it. We also convened a symposium, a national symposium on the Marshall Plan in 2018, again hosted by the mayor. And we also had an economic summit, which we were talking about how to bring investment to Newark. And I can tell you right now, there is a pretty positive development in that regard. We're working with a potential investor to come in and do some serious work there in Newark, and you'll be hearing about it. And of course, many of you were aware of the gentrification summit, because the national town hall meeting was also carried live on WBAI, also carried really in WPFW, as well as on C-SPAN. And you saw the work that we're attempting to do. That's because we do support the progressive effort and policies being articulated by this administration. Does not mean it's perfect, by the way. There are glitches. There always are. Nothing is perfect. But it's the direction we support. And we support the concept that it is a collective enterprise, UJIMA, collective work and responsibility. Get up, get going, get involved, get engaged. And as you critique from a perspective of your involvement, the first criteria for your criticism is your own work. Get involved and help things move forward. And we anticipate in 2020 having the next State of the Black World Conference also in the city of Newark, New Jersey. So again, we hope this has been an instructive program, a helpful program. Again, those of you who have lead service lines or those of you who have questions about it, who have older homes, call 973-733-6303, 973-733-6303. We'll be following up on the Newark water crisis in the future because we believe that Newark should, in fact, be safe, just, and sustainable. This is the Professor Dr. Ron Daniels signing off, so we'll see you again next week here on Vantage Point.